correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to Me and Steve Talk RPGs, a podcast where me and my friend Steve try and help you get the most out of your role-playing game experience.
Welcome back to Me and Steve Talk RPGs. I'm here with my friend Steve.
Hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve. I have to talk some RPGs, but before we get into that, we're going to talk about Order 66.
What are you talking about? I never listened to the Order 66.
Should always listen to Order 66.
But everyone never listens to the Order 66.
Well, they never release episodes.
Well, but things have been afoot. GM Phil has been posting teasers.
Yes, butts are afoot.
And I saw today in the D20 Discord, GM Chris posted they do have a new episode recorded. And he still has to go through and edit it, however much they do that, which I don't think they edit real heavily, but given it's them, it's probably like a marathon episode that, you know, who knows how long it is. But so I don't know how long it's going to take him to edit it. But yeah, GM Phil has been dropping quotes from, hang on, let me look, one of the new trilogy movies. Yeah, from The Force Awakens. So what exactly that means, I don't know. It's a thing. But for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, the Order 66 is, well, it's really the flagship podcast of the D20 Radio Network, hosted by GM Phil and GM Chris, both of which who were at Gamer Nation Con. Well, Chris is because he's kind of one of the hosts, so he's always there. But anyway, yeah, Phil was there. Dave was there too, GM Dave, who, I don't know, it's been a while since he was on, but he was, you know, one of the founding hosts of the show. I don't know, like I said, I can't tell you what they talk about or if any, you know, special tidbits or anything come out of it, but I do know they have an episode in the works. So definitely if you're into Star Wars or the Star Wars RPG, it's very much a podcast worth checking out.
Very sorry. Had to use the bathroom.
Aha. No, I was just saying that the Order 66 is very much a podcast worth checking out if you're into Star Wars or anything like that.
Yeah, or, you know, Chris and Dave are good people in general, so.
Phil.
Yeah, Phil.
Yeah, I don't know how much Dave is actively involved anymore. He wasn't for a while, but it's hard to say. I mean, they've been going for years and years and years, all told, so.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, that's that, but like I said, yeah, check that out. We'll throw a link. But if you just, you know, search the Order 66 on any of your podcatchers, it should come up. And you want the Order 66, not the Order 66 Saga, which is the same people and the same podcast. That's just the old version about Star Wars Saga Edition.
Which, I mean, if you're looking for information on that, then it's, well, there. Yeah. Not sure, yeah, why you would. I mean, it's not bad, but
I never played it, so.
I looked at it a couple times. It's okay.
I mean, NDS is fun.
Yes, narrative dice. So you had a topic for today.
I did. And this topic kind of came to mind the other day, and I thought, I don't know if this qualifies as a hot take or not. It could, I suppose, if you were trying to be all clickbaity about it. But I'm going to say it, and you tell me what you think. I think people talk all the time about rules light games.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think rules light is a playstyle choice, at least as much, if not more, than it is a design choice.
Yeah, okay. I agree and I disagree with that statement.
Like, it gets thrown around a lot as a game design statement.
Right. So I agree. I'll answer to that and then maybe you can elaborate a little bit more. I agree and disagree with that statement. I agree that in some cases, rules light is a choice. In that, in some systems, you can just cut a bunch of rules out and you don't have to play with them. Like, I love Cyberpunk 2020. 99% of us don't play with the hacking rules, right? 99% of us don't play Edgerunners. Just because it's A, not fun for the whole table, and B, really tedious. And that is completely making that game effectively rules lighter, right? Like, it's lighter than rules it was previously. However, you still need a handful of rules in most cases for a game to continue. And if you completely remove everything except for, like, even if you remove all rules, then you have nothing. And in some cases in games like D&D, if you remove too many rules, that game becomes trivial and then is now pointless.
Fair. I think everything you said there is reasonably accurate, in my opinion. My kind of base behind this. Okay, so what we think of when we say rules light games, or when a designer says it's a rules light game, or the sales pitch says it's rules light, whatever. I think what that's saying is it's a game, and the goal of the design is to get the players to think this way. Okay, that's how I'm going to start thinking of what quote unquote rules light design this way. By the way, this whole thought was brought on by a comment that Nova made in our Discord about crunchy systems versus rules light systems and stuff, and this got me off down a mental tangent. Amazing, right?
Fair.
So what these games are trying to get you to do is think action first, how to resolve it second.
Yes.
Okay. And to me, that's the difference, or the big difference, maybe, is an appropriate way to say it, between quote-unquote rules light and a crunchy game. It's not the amount of rules or anything like that. And in that regard, even though it can get a bit crunchy, something like Genesis or Star Wars does have quite a number of rules, but by its design, it's intended to be played rules light, you know, in the context that I feel like, and I think if Jay Little was here for us to ask him right now, he would wholeheartedly agree that the rule of cool should always trump what the rule book says, as long as it's not like game-breakingly ridiculous. In other words, for the moment, you know, maybe there are instances where you wouldn't allow X, Y, or Z to happen, but in a given moment, it's cool. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. I think, okay, so in my thoughts is that if you're using the rule of cool, you're basically subbing out one rule for that game, right? Or a handful of rules. So in that way, yes, you are making it lighter. But you never rule of cool the entire game away. You know what I mean?
Fair.
And I feel like rules light as a buzzword is fine, but we need to look at these games more as bare bones, or I like the term narrative driven, even though there's rules like games that aren't necessarily, well, most rules like games are narratively driven. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do the inverse, because in order for it to be more gameplay driven, you have to have more gameplay. So in a way, I feel you're just leaning on a different pillar, a different leg to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of this got me thinking too, when we did our GNC recap episode, I talked a decent amount about the Earthdawn game that Brett ran for us at GNC.
Right.
And I would call Earthdawn a crunchy system, without a doubt. Step mechanics, and Brett was running a, I guess you could call it simplified, the pre-calculated, you know, he basically told us there are more complicated ways to do the step mechanics, but this is how we're going to do them because it works good at the table for people who don't know the game, you know, and it does this, that, the other thing. Okay. But I feel like that game, for the narrative to work, some of those mechanics are kind of almost necessary to make that mechanic, that narrative and that world function the way it's supposed to. Like, so to speak, the action necessitates the mechanics. But I think to a certain point, again, where I'm saying that I think rules light is a playstyle choice is more in that you're thinking, you know, this is what I want to do. And then we figure out how do we make the dice tell us if we succeeded or not. Not, I want to attack, and we roll the dice to see how well I attacked it.
Right. Yeah, you're more so just saying how you attacked and what that looks like. And yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes, though, the numbers are fun.
They are. And I'm not going to lie. I get a bang out of rolling dice. But I realized, and this is going to come to no shock to you or probably anyone who's listened to this podcast more than one or two episodes, I tend to overthink things a lot and just rehash things right in my brain. And I realized that partway through really both Havoc Brigade sessions I ran at GNC, I stopped giving a crap about rolling any dice against the players. And yeah. I also realized that the players didn't actually, like, they were making up all these outlandish things they were doing, which is exactly in the spirit of the game. And yes, they were going, so I can add this die and this die. It became a mini game to see how many dice they could justify getting in their hand.
Right.
And in that game, that's in the spirit, right? But
I feel like that game needs, I feel like, and I'm just going to share this opinion. I feel like that game, and I noticed when you were running it for us, that game needs like a wording tweak in that you need to be able to just set a difficulty number for most things in your head. And if can reach that number on dice, then great. Mm-hmm. Versus the everything needing to be adversarial. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to, after X amount of rolls, it then becomes an adversarial roll, right? Mm-hmm. And you roll against the players, and whoever wins. And that way, it adds a little bit more chaos to the whole situation, right? Like every role being matched is kind of frustrating because you don't know how hard you need to try for this thing.
Fair. Yeah, I've actually been contemplating, because the other thing that happened is I actually watched on Itch, Grant Howitt, the author, has a video talking about Havoc Brigade. And in watching that, his envisioning of the game, his experiences running it, I would say tend more dark than what mine have been, like in overall tone.
I can get that. So I can get that because he's very much building 40K orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And 40K orcs, while goofy, have a more dark tone because 40K has a grim dark tone in general. And I can get how you read that and got that and got a more goofy interpretation and he's running it darker. I can understand that.
But, like, I feel like, how do I want to say that? The bones of 40K for running the madcap shenanigans that I have with it, or the bones of Havoc Brigade, if I said 40K. I don't know what I said. But anyway, they're great for that. But like you said, when you're running a madcap shenanigan game, at some point, yeah, the opposed roles get weird because dice.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, sometimes you just want your players succeed, and sometimes you just want your players to fail, and sometimes you just want them to fail miserably.
And sometimes they want to fail miserably.
Right. And sometimes you just want to stack the odds against them and go, okay, this is going to be incredibly difficult. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
And you can in just adding more dice that you're rolling, but you can't really stack the deck against players that way.
Yeah, dice are I just realized that at some point, like you said, it becomes, you just want to let them have their fun, so to speak. And like, I don't know if I actually told you this. At one point in the one session, the players decided to have an in-character drinking contest.
I read that on the Discord.
And I'm like, okay, how do we do this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it meant, you know, I'm like, this is the gymnastics you're going through running this game. You have to try and figure out, for a game that has very minimal mechanics, how the hell do you have a PvP drinking contest?
You just make them roll against each other until, and then every time someone succeeds, you add like a die to the chaos roll. And when you decide, you roll the chaos thing, and that's what happens.
Well, what I ended up doing was, I'm like, okay, so here's how we're going to do it. You're all going to roll, and we'll do it kind of So, and as it happened, they had like three people rolled pretty well. And two people, I think, had no successes. One person had one success, and everyone else had like 3 to 5. Like, okay, well, that's the first round. So the three of you are now in the second round. And then they're looking at me, can I this and that? And I'm like, you know what? I said, here's what I think. Y'all are having a drinking contest. You need to justify to each other how you can use, because somehow Fat Crab was using his exquisite sword in the drinking contest.
Right.
I don't remember how he justified it. But at that point, it was like, you all have your little thing here, and I'm incredibly amused watching it, but like, I just don't know how to referee this.
Kick your feet up and let them have at it.
Right. And but like, again, that's to me is kind of like they're playing the story they want to have. Let's kind of shuffle the rules a little bit out of the way and just use them to guide it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and I think that not every game system can do that. Right. You know, we talked about Earthdawn, another game system that I don't have personal experience with, although having heard it, some actual play of it, like Warhammer Fantasy 4th edition.
Right.
Rather complex system. The trick with it is that it has a lot of intertwined systems. It has, you know, momentum and this and that that involve, you know, how many success levels you have on a roll versus how many your opponent has, et cetera, and so on. And I just feel like, you know, that's a game where, and I think too, right, part of that is the grim, brutal enforcement of the world on the characters.
Right.
Which is represented by the rules.
Yeah, and there's fun to be had in a 40K universe that does that.
Well, this is
or, fantasy, well, Warhammer, 40K, but same, you know, same, I mean? Same, but different. Why did you just cut out? Steve, your mic just went out. Nothing. Hello? Mm-mm. It's not me, is it? You can hear me. Yeah, so. Yeah, I still have sound. Ew. I'm sorry. Oh, there we go.
Oh, okay. Unplugged the interface, plugged it back in.
Sometimes that's all it takes.
Like, but the USB cable, not the actual power cable.
Yeah, like I said, sometimes that's all it takes.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes it's just, what can happen is, I don't even know, like, signal gets to bouncing around side of the cable, and it just cancels itself out. And...
yeah, well, like, I was watching the lights on my interface, you know, like the level meter.
Yeah, was it going, was reading. I'm like... yeah, I just knew that, like, you were talking, and then Discord went, like, nope, he's not talking no more, and I was like, oh, shit. Glad at least we were able to fix that.
Yeah. So where did I cut out?
Good grief, I don't even remember. After troubleshooting that. We were talking about the grimdark of Warhammer.
All right, so, like I said, though, I think that the so to speak, the strictness of the rules for Warhammer enforces the grim brutality of the world itself. And so I feel like if you try to strip that back, it could lose some of its feel if the players aren't already bought into it. Because I think the key thing to what I'm going to call rules light play is the players have to be bought in.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
And players, so that is not negotiable in rules light play. If your players aren't bought in, it's not going to work. Period. End of discussion.
And so, like, that's where, you know, like, say a Warlock or a game like that, that is effectively a stripped down version of Warhammer Fantasy, you know, yeah, it can do that, but it's intended for people who already know that world, not necessarily are trying to get the feel for it. And so this is where I'm not saying, or not in any way trying to say that rules like games from a design perspective are better or more fun or anything. I'm just saying that I think for me, a lot of times the fun comes from putting that action first and the mechanics secondary.
Right.
You know, but if the mechanics are serving the feel, then you use them too.
Well, and yeah, it's sort of the same discussion we've been having.
Yeah, no, it is, but like it's sort of like roundy round about it, but it's look, I feel like just because it's rules light doesn't automatically make it more fun.
Right.
Either.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I think the main benefit with rules light is that it's more so that there aren't rules to get in the way. But again, yeah, if you're not bought into something, you're not bought into it, and you're not going to be invested. So it's a little give and take. Like, I'm not going to be invested in a really high fantasy rules light game in the same way that somebody that's not interested in cyberpunk is going to be invested in Cyborg. It's just not going to happen. It's, you can sit there and want to, you know, oh, well, yeah, but when there's not rules to at least dig into, it sort of, it strips away some of the bits that players that don't necessarily like the genre can hide in. I find myself in D&D in that way. You know, playing D&D, I can stick my nose in and stay in the places that I want to hide in. And if it was something rules light, I would have no choice. I would be like, oh, I have nowhere to hide.
So unpack that a little bit. I'm curious as to kind of what you mean by hiding in the rules.
Well, I mean by, you know how different players light up at different points, right?
Right.
You know, you have John, you have Mark, you have Luke, you have all the apostles. Matthew's there too. I don't know. Anyways, one player might be way more engaged during combat, while another player is way more engaged during narrative. Or, you know, even to break that down even farther, somebody might be way more invested in this political side, whereas somebody's like way more invested in the espionage of what's happening versus somebody's only here to beat down the bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, people can go into their own niche. With a rules light game, if your niche is you're the numbers guy, you know what I mean? In a lot of ways, if you're the person that, what do you do? Well, I sit and calculate the DPS. In a rules light game, that's not going to work. I mean, you cut out again.
Okay. Yeah, it appears to be working again.
Yeah, it sounds like you need a new USB cable.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to find one. Or I need to quit setting something on it.
But yeah, you know, if you have the guy that calculates the numbers, that's somebody who's hiding in the rules. You know what I mean? That's somebody who maybe isn't as, like, I'm that way. When I play a lot of D&D, I'm not as invested in the D&D as I am in, like, well, this interaction works really weird, and I can make this do that, and that do this, and what's happening? Oh, there's a dragon prince and a warlord, and I don't care. Like,
Now, I get what you're saying. It's a different way of enjoying things, right? But that is, if you want to say you are getting your giggle to a point out of gaming the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not saying that's bad. You can't, but like you said, you can't really do that in a rules light game. You can't stack the deck in your favor, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, there,
as much anyway,
you can definitely sit there and calculate numbers, but like what I'm more so driving at is if there's something interesting in a rules set or some interesting dynamic, you're not going to notice that as much in a rules light game because there isn't as many like in the same way that there's infinite options, especially mechanically in a lot of rules light games, there isn't a lot of option as far as you can go this way or this way. It's a lot of when it comes down to this situation, roll these dice, and that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And no. Or, you know, in a lot of cases, it's like, well, don't let it come down to this. But if it comes down to this, here's how you handle it.
Yeah, I get that. And I think, for lack of a better way to say it, in a game like, we'll say, Genesis.
Right.
There's no difference between a fire wizard and an ice wizard.
No. The only difference is that the fire wizard has blue or red fireballs and the ice wizard has blue ones.
Right. And there are people to whom that's important.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to invalidate anyone, and I understand completely when you're like, oh, well, this is important to me. Okay, great. That's fine. But it's not important to me.
No, right, exactly. And so, like I said, you know, we've been going back to what I said. I'm not trying to say that rules light or crunchy is one is better or whatever. I think they serve different purposes. They entertain different people. And you know me well enough to know that, well, I think for me, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, I think I really like the freedom of playing rules light. But I also, if I'm presented with a crunchy game, get a giggle out of gaming the system and making it and taking advantage of what I can do in it.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Yeah.
But it's like a complete different side of the brain.
It is.
Like
it is. No, go ahead.
It almost becomes more of a board game, like a tactical board game, if I'm gaming the system out.
Right.
As opposed to, I'm going to do something that looks cool and hopefully it has a neat effect.
Yeah, exactly. I feel that. I understand completely because I'm the same way of like, man, I really prefer to do something that's, you know, has some weight to it versus this could look neat.
Yeah. But I think, too, if you have a table where most of the table tends one way and one or two people tend the other, that can really create some weird, I don't know if tension, I suppose, is the right word, you know, where certain players are thinking, why aren't they carrying their weight? And others are thinking, why are they just crunching numbers?
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, like, I think it's, you know, if you're in that situation, I think you just try and look at it as, is it fun? Not, are we statistically winning or are we looking cool even if we didn't win?
I feel like looking cool, feeling cool, and then statistically winning. I don't know. It is two sides of the same coin, and it's fun to do both things. And in the right situation, doing the cool thing and just not worrying about did it work or not is really fun. And then in the right situation, being like, are we actually winning this? And, you know, the answer being is really fun, too. Like,
yeah.
Are we thwarting the bad guy? I don't know right now. I don't know. Doesn't seem like it.
I think that, too, though, is where, as a GM, it falls on your shoulders a little bit to, how do I want to say this? Because I think the thing, and I will say I can be very guilty of this, if I'm playing a game that is very statistically driven, you know, crunchier, I tend to focus on the numbers. And so if someone does something that's cool but doesn't have a numbers impact, I'm less likely to weight that as heavily into what's happening. And I think that's a mistake you can make as a GM. Like I said, yes. I will admit I do it. The trick, though, is figuring out how to weight it in a way that still keeps both sides feeling fully valid. And this is, I think, where, if you remember when we talked with Justin Eacock about how he runs combat in some of his very scheduled games, be it for the podcast or when he was like doing the dinner and a game thing, about where he's not really keeping track of hit points. He's looking for the combat to take a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
I think that is an approach that perhaps does kind of let both of those things happen. You know what I mean? Like, are you looking for this encounter to take X amount of hit points away from your party? Are you looking for this encounter to set a tone and resolve with the party having a feeling from it having happened?
Right.
And I'm wondering, I guess, kind of out loud here, are you trying to have a statistical outcome or a story outcome?
That's a very good point. I mean, it's very solid. Yeah.
I'm not saying one is better inherently than the other.
No.
I guess it depends on why are you playing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that's a very solid point. And yeah, it's slightly different from where we started, but I think we've come to sort of a gentle resolution to your hot take. With that and our technical issues aside, let's go ahead and move into Game of the Week.
Oh, woohoo! Game of the Week!
Game of the Week! Game of the Week!
I'll take this one because I've been starting these off recently.
All right.
How familiar are you? Has anyone talked to you about Helldivers 2?
Helldivers 2?
Yes, Helldivers 2. It is a new video game. Has just come out maybe like 2 months ago.
Okay, no, I don't think so.
Okay, Helldivers 2 is about spreading managed democracy. How familiar are you with the Paul Verhoeven film Starship Troopers? An adaptation of the Heinlein novel.
Never watched it.
Okay.
I know I need to.
Yeah, that should be on the list of things to watch. It's a really fantastic movie. And it's all about the dangers of fascism and a commentary on war in general, but specifically like the Vietnam War.
Okay.
And I mean, that's a major commentary happening in that. And I'm glossing over this as lightly as possible, because the movie is the heaviest satire could be, because it's Paul Verhoeven. It's the guy that directed RoboCop. You know what you're getting with a Verhoeven film. Helldivers 2 is that movie even reduced finer down into concentrate and then made into a video game. All that to say, I have a game called Vatborn to Kill.
Okay.
And I'm going to copy and paste it to you. It's all of $3.16. It's about 25 pages. It is going in the room right now.
Linky, linky. Okay.
Description is, you are a clone. All you've ever known is war. As a member of Xerox Company, you and your fellow Vatborn warriors defend the liberty and prosperity of the Mandate, planet by planet. You will fight the endless fight to bring democracy to every corner of the galaxy. Death is temporary. You fall, and you will fall. Your fighting spirit will forge anew, ready to sacrifice everything to preserve our way of life. So, you know, you're Vatborn. So it's, you die, you're, another guy's going to drop in identical to you. It looks like it's, well, it's run off of the Don't Roll a One system, which is a lot of fun. And man, it looks fun. It looks like a TTRPG version of Helldivers 2. And that game is a lot of fun. And I hope this one is too.
It vaguely reminds me of like a very military version of Paranoia.
Almost. It has kind of that vibe. It's a little bit more, I feel like this should be more combat focused, right, whereas Paranoia is not, to say it in the lightest.
No, Paranoia is red tape focused.
Yeah, Paranoia is about almost like what the game has described itself to be, Paranoia.
Right, right.
But yeah, this seems like just a lot of fun to just throw on a table and be like, character creation takes 2 minutes. We're going to make a character, we're going to kill that character, and we're going to do it again. It's like all the best, all the best experiences in like a cyberpunk game, right?
Well, also would fit kind of neat into almost a Slay-ish world.
Yeah.
Like the world of progress.
I mean, Helldivers kind of has that. Not necessarily with the TV side of things, but it does kind of have that, how do I put this? There's a lot of propaganda videos that get made,
mm-hmm,
and your Helldiver might get lucky and end up in the background of one of those propaganda videos, getting your butt totally wrecked by a giant, you know, spider. But
fair.
But yeah, that was mine, Vatborn to Kill, which I don't know. I like the aesthetic. It uses a lot of barcodes, which is neat.
Cool.
It's weird and dumb, and I like it, and I don't care.
All right. So that actually sounds cool. So I'm going to, well, okay. Normally we don't go straight for Kickstarters in this segment, right?
But there was an important one.
Well, I'm going to go with Kickstarter that Gav Quiroga just launched within the last few days. Trying to see.
Oh, he has been. I have such beef with Gav right now because I have been seeing nothing but this on his Facebook page. And I got to take care of my dog real quick. I'll be right back.
All right.
Go ahead and keep talking.
Okay. So this is a Kickstarter, like I said, Gavriel Quiroga has put up. It has already funded. I believe he just put it up. I don't know how long it's been, but he's already at double his funding goal. It still has, as of day of recording, 39 days to go. So by the time you guys hear this, it'll be like 32 or 33. This is the guy who did Warpland. He did Neurosity. He did Hell Knight, which we had him on to talk about. And I feel like, in a way, Gav is almost kind of in very topical, too, for the discussion we had today about, you know, rules, light, etc. Because...
Sorry, dog was trying to steal my dinner. Anyways, I'm mad at Gav because I've been seeing this all over his Facebook.
Right, but I feel like bringing this game up after this discussion is kind of appropriate, too, because Gav's stuff... You know, I have Hell Knight and Neurosity and Warpland. Yeah. I haven't read as much. These are games that are all about the feel with some dice thrown in for random elements. And Gav himself, when we had him on, said, in a way, he's an artist that works in game books. Like, it is as much about the world and how the book makes you feel when you read it as it is about the game itself, if not more, right? Like, But so anyway, what the Black Rainbow Society is sort of an expansion/spinoff for Hell Knight. You don't need to have Hell Knight to play it, but it would mesh very well with Hell Knight. It's kind of got that rock and roll biker vibe. You know, I think he cites his inspiration for the game in general as 80s metal zines. And William S. Burroughs.
Yeah, seems about right.
and like, I don't know if you've seen Hell Knight, if you've read it, or just looked at it. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, Hell Knight is an amazing thing.
It's a statement. Like, you know, it is an art piece in and of itself, regardless of the fact that it is an interactive game tool. And see, I figured I'd shout this out.
Ooh, and
I think base level is only like $30.
Yeah, and the best part about the whole thing, he's made a new playlist.
Yes, a lot of what did I see on there? The Cure,
Scorpions, AC/DC,
Pink Floyd, Sisters of Mercy, The Doors, Killing Joke. Like, yeah,
Nazareth. Oh, I love Nazareth. Joy Division. It's a good like playlist.
Am I wrong to say, though, Steve, that Gav's work kind of has to be experienced?
It,
like, even if you don't,
it's a see it to believe kind of thing. Yeah, you gotta at least read the books because it's so freaking cool.
Like,
there's such cool stuff.
Like to say, you know, like Hell Knight definitely did do a bit of the Morkborg thing. But even if you read Neurosity, which came out before Morkborg, it's still got that really strong, evocative world to it that, like we were saying, rules light, but you have to have buy-in. Well, if you look at Gav's stuff, you get what he wants you to buy in for.
Yeah, buy-in's not hard on Gav's stuff because he's about as transparent can be.
So yeah, this is, like I said, it's currently on Kickstarter. It'll still have
funded, by the way.
yeah, 200%+ funded as of time of recording. So
yeah, so good news. It's coming.
yeah, but yeah, it, and like, I know, you know, Hell Knight took a while to get the print run out and everything.
Yeah, I don't know how long this will take now that he's got an established. With Hell Knight.
A little bit more established chain, I think.
Yeah.
But, like, it was worth it. Like, Hell Knight is everything I expected when I actually got the book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't. I gotta play this at some point. I keep wanting to, and every time I set up a game to play it, I can't do it. I can't get it on a table. I gotta play it at some point, because I'm so in. I gotta play this version, too, now. I got to play both original and this version. That's like, I need to play Neurosity and Warpland because I'm in on both of those too. Like, there's no buy-in for me. I'm in 100%. But, well, with all that being said, we want to thank everyone for listening. As always, links to everything are in the show notes. Discord is our main source of media. Come join us on the Discord. Come hang out. Come have cool conversations about things like the Asmodee situation. And
yeah,
if you feel like throwing us a couple bucks, come join us on Patreon. We have new episodes or new exclusives that we're always working on, always trying to get those out as soon as possible.
Yeah, I just put one out Sunday, actually.
Yeah, Steve's on the ball here. And then,
well, I don't know about on the ball, but I did manage to get one out again, finally.
Well, he's on a ball. We're not sure if it's the ball, but...
I'm leaving that one alone.
But, yeah, as always, we want to remind everyone to be kind to one another and get out there and play some RPGs.
Yep, take care, y'all.
Intro and outro music by the band 12 Noon. You can email us at meandsteverpg@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at andrpgs. Find us on Facebook at meandsteverpgpodcast. On Discord at meandsteverpgs. And as always, all of these links are in the show notes. Thank you, and be kind to one another.
How much for the cigar?
Cigar, $20, dog. You gotta go down the street to the store and buy that.